Supper finished, they sat around the campfire. Frank asked Shipman a lot of questions about Texas. James listened closely. They were questions he would have wanted to ask if he felt more kindly toward the young smuggler. Annie climbed down from the wagon with a pencil and some papers in her hand. She sat a little way back from the fire and started sketching. James wondered what she found here that was worth drawing pictures of. Annie had always been something of an artist. Before she left home, she had sketched a couple of pictures of their mother to give to Michael and Andrew. She had sketched other members of the family and the old family cabin. Along the trail from Tennessee, she had sketched scenes they encountered and wrote notes about the things they saw. At least when she was sketching, she wasn't giving him the jaw about something or other. Shipman was eventually nagged by curiosity enough that he pushed to his feet and went over to see what Annie was drawing.
Why, that's me.
As near as I can draw you.
I didn't think I was all that handsome.
I draw things the way I see them.
It's getting dark. You probably can't see very good.
James slept little that night. He was always conscious of the Mexican soldiers camped beside them. He didn't know what manner of men they might be, how far they could be trusted. He insisted that Annie sleep in the wagon, though it was cramped and uncomfortable because of the farming equipment and few pieces of cookware and furniture they'd hauled all the way from Tennessee. He rolled his blankets on the ground close beside the wagon, where he could hear if anyone tried to sneak into it. Nothing happened. He noticed that the guards faced into the camp rather than outward from it. They were more concerned about keeping their prisoners than about any threat that might come upon them from outside. They need not have worried. James saw no way to escape. If he had been by himself, it might be different. He almost wished he'd come alone, like Michael and Andrew, carrying nothing that he couldn't pack on a horse. These soldiers would have played hell catching him, or holding him if they had caught him. Unencumbered, he could have given them a run for their money. Once into the woods, he would have been gone like a red fox. They were up at daylight and fixed a hasty breakfast. Sergeant Diaz impatiently prodded them to be done with it so they could set out upon the trail. He spoke harshly to James and to Sly Shipman, but he was civil to Frank and chivalrous to the two women. He seemed particularly solicitous about Hope's welfare.
See what I told you? He ain't a bad man, that Diaz. He just got his own notions about things, is all.
I wish he didn't have such a strong notion about sending us back to Louisiana. If we could just get to San Felipe...
Well, this is a long ways from San Felipe.
We'll get there. I swear we'll get there.
The afternoon sun was low at their backs when they returned to the banks of the Sabine. The teams were tired and Hope looked exhausted, but Diaz would not permit them to camp another night in Texas. He pointed to the shallowest ford.
We will camp here. You will be closely watched, so do not think you can wait until we are gone, then cross again.
Watch till your eyes fall out, damn you, but we'll be coming back.
Impossibly, Diaz seemed to have heard James's comment.
I would not advise it.
What about our guns? We'll need them to find meat on our way back to Tennessee.
Diaz made sure the rifles were unloaded, then gave them to Frank rather than to James.
You should counsel this young one. I have no wish to see him buried in Tejas.
Stubborn runs in the family. We outgrow it, most of us.
Diaz turned to Shipman.
I do not waste my time with advice to you. I know you will be back.
Shipman simply smiled.
I will be watchful, and I will have a cell waiting for you. It will be deep and dark.
The Lewises put the teams into the river, and in a few minutes the mules and the wagons were dripping water on the Louisiana shore. James looked back. True to his word, Diaz and his men were making camp on the Texas bank. To travel so far and be turned back. He smacked his right fist into the palm of his left hand.
Don't bust your fingers for nothing, friend. Like I told you, there's ways.
James looked west across the river. He could see Sergeant Diaz's campfire on the Sabine's far bank. His resentment still simmered. He turned back to his own fire, wherein he had made coffee. They didn't drink it every day, for it was scarce and expensive. But she had decided tonight it might help take the edge off their disappointment. Or maybe she was trying to impress Sly Shipman. Two nights ago, they'd camped on this same Louisiana riverbank. The smell of spring's rebirth was in the air, and the birds had sung prettily up in the trees. James thought it must be a different set of birds tonight, for they were making noise, not music. Annie was acting very pleased because Shipman had agreed to camp with them the night instead of riding on, as if he were doing them a big favor. James had a feeling that they couldn't have chased him away with a club, not when he had a chance to enjoy another woman-cooked meal or two. And he seemed taken with Annie's company. Quite a few of the young men back home had shown a similar departure from good judgment. Had they been watching Annie for 20 years from a brother's close perspective, seeing her critical moods without being swayed by her handsome looks, they might not have tarried.
Look at him over yonder, that Diaz. I expect he'll stay there as long as we stay here.
Longer. He'll want to be sure you don't turn around and go right back across.
Well, that's pretty much what I had in mind.
Shipman had taken time to shave off his several days' growth of whiskers. It probably made him look better to the women, but James didn't see much of an improvement. James's jaw was still sore.
Try to look at it the way he does. He figures that you'll figure that very thing. So if you move your wagons east tomorrow out of his sight, he'll figure you're figuring that he'll turn back to Nacogdoches. He'll figure you're figuring to go back across as soon as you figure he's left. So he'll pull off a ways into the woods and wait out of sight, figuring to catch you. Like as not, he'll stay close to the river for 2 or 3 days, trying to outsmart you.
So how long do you think we'll have to wait?
There you? I wouldn't wait at all. I'd just pull back where they couldn't see me from across the river, then head south on this side. There's other good crossings down yonder ways. Then, while he's still wasting his time up here, you head southeast and light a shuck straight for San Felipe. There's been people crossing this river for a long time. Folks that didn't want the authorities looking over their shoulders.
James looked at his cousin Frank, asking with his eyes.
Sounds too easy. Things that are too easy never work like they're supposed to.
Ain't but a handful of soldiers in all of northern Texas. Him trying to shut off the whole border is like trying to wipe out an ant bed with a sharp stick.
Annie and Hope were washing the supper tinware in a pan.
I don't suppose there'd be a regular trail.
If there was a trail, the soldiers know about it. No, you'll have to make your own way. All you need is a good sense of direction.
You don't need to worry, sis. I've led you this far.
You had a marked trail to follow. I just wish Michael and Andrew could have come and met us. Things have been a lot easier.
If you'd wanted easy, you ought to have stayed home like I told you.
Mr. Shipman, you reckon we could persuade you to go with us and show us the way?
I wish I could, ma'am, but I got business responsibilities. I'll go with you a ways in the morning, as far as my cabin, to point you right. Then I'll have to bid you adieu, as they say in Nacogdoches. I must say, I'll miss you ladies' good cooking. Man gets kind of lank being on the trail most of the time, doing for himself.
You should get yourself a good wife, Mr. Shipman.
Yes, ma'am. And it's the time I've thought about that. But being married to me would be like being hitched to a boat captain who's always at sea. I wouldn't wish that off onto any woman I thought a lot of. And if I didn't think a lot of her, there wouldn't be no point in me marrying her, would there?
You'll run into somebody someday who'll make you want to keep your business close to home.
Shipman nodded, staring at her in a way that James thought bordered on being indecent.
That could sure be, ma'am.
They were on the trail as soon as breakfast was finished. The wagons backtracked eastward a couple of miles, the way they had originally come from Nacogdoches, until they reached a dim trace that turned off to the south. Shipman, on his dun horse, tipped his hat to Annie on the lead wagon.
All right, now you're going to want to follow me close.
The river had long since fallen out of sight.
What if Diaz sent a scout over here to keep an eye on us?
Mexican soldiers can't cross into Louisiana, and American soldiers can't cross over into Texas. There's a treaty.
Did Diaz sign it?
Sergeants don't get to sign treaties or make laws. They just get sent out to do the dirty work. No, Diaz will be waiting in the timber, watching for you to try and sneak back across the river. But y'all are fixing to fool him.
Toward noon, the wagons reached a log cabin that stood high above the river. James was a little nervous about being back within sight of the Sabine again. What if Diaz had sent a scout downriver to watch the crossings? He sat on his bay horse and studied the opposite bank and its timber for some minutes. He saw no sign of life.
As I you, I wouldn't be in a cold sweat. Everything will be all right.
You seem to know a lot about how Mexican soldiers think.
Well, ever since I was 14 years old, I've been making my living out guessing them.
The cabin was old and not nearly so well built as the one Mordecai Lewis's family once had back in Tennessee. It was a single small cabin without a dog run to divide it into two sections. The place sure needed some patching up.
You build this yourself?
No, I fell into it by inheritance, you might say. It belonged to old Eli Pleasant. Him and me, we worked out of here a lot of times. Nobody showed up to claim his property after he died. I reckoned old Eli wouldn't mind me going on and using it.
Frank noticed a white locust tree in front of the cabin, flanked on either side by a cactus-like plant known as the Spanish dagger.
Seems an odd match.
You'll find a good many places in this part of the country have got the same arrangement. Sort of a custom here, you might say.
James suspected from his manner that there was more to it than that, but Shipman volunteered no additional information. He turned to Annie.
This is my place. Y'all will want to stop here for dinner and rest your stock a while.
Shipman pointed toward a small barn and lean-to shed and a set of horse pens.
There's corn out there for the mules. I'll unhitch them for you.
Much obliged.
Annie waited for Shipman to help her down from the wagon seat. James had seen her get down from it by herself several times a day all the way out from Tennessee. He'd never noticed her needing help. Frank was particularly interested in the place, for he remembered Eli Pleasant much better than James did. While the three of them unhitched the mules and led them to the pen, Shipman and Frank took turns recounting stories about Eli's exploits. Frank's two boys walked along and listened, their mouths wide open. The stories made Eli sound 9 feet tall. James thought it a wonder that the old man had managed to live as long as he had, because skirting the laws of two countries had been a way of life for him. James deduced that smuggling on this frontier was a crime only in the eyes of the authorities. It was regarded as a welcome service by the common people who lived on both sides of the Sabine.
I've heard stories about the outlaws who stay close to the river so they can swim quick if they have to. How could Eli have operated here so long without some of them robbing, maybe even killing him?
There's kind of an unwritten treaty amongst us who live here. We don't bother one another. We don't see nothing or hear nothing, and we sure as hell don't tell nothing if the authorities from either side come poking around. Eli lived up to that code, and so do I. Anybody breaks it is apt to have trouble catching his breath.
Is it that way down in Austin's colony?
No, it's so law-abiding that they ain't even built them a decent jailhouse. Anybody tries to start a ruckus, Austin and his people run him out so quick his shadow is a day late catching up with him.
By the time they got the mules unhitched and watered and fed a little corn, they found Annie and Hope sweeping out the cabin.
You ladies don't need to be doing that. It'll just get all dirty again.
I never have understood how a man can live in a place like this and never straighten it up.
James smiled inwardly. Now she was showing Shipman a little of her true self. They'd be seeing the last of him pretty soon now, for a little of Annie's lecturing went a long way. The man would be glad to wave them goodbye.
I don't exactly live here. I just use this for a starting and stopping place. Out on the trail is where I live.
Just the same. It won't hurt this cabin to fill the broom every now and then.
I'm mighty glad to have run into you ladies. Makes me realize there's a whole other world back yonder, and I've been missing out on some of its finer blessings.
Before long, the women had smoke coming out of the chimney and venison frying in the fireplace. At the rate Annie was cooking up the meat, James thought he was going to have to leave the wagons and go hunting again. But Shipman went into a lean-to and brought out a couple of cured hams.
I'm putting these into your wagon, Miss Lewis.
Mr. Shipman, you don't have to go and be doing that.
It's mighty little for the good meals I've eaten with y'all, for the kindness you ladies done me in fixing up this cabin. Why, it almost looks human again.
It needs a woman in it.
Eli used to have one once in a while. He'd fetch them out of Natchitoches from one place and another. Widder women, mostly, looking for a new husband. They would pretty soon decide Eli wasn't the one they was looking for.
You mean they came here without even the benefit of clergy?
You have to understand, ma'am, that the clergy ties a hard bind. Eli was always partial to a slipknot. That way, there wasn't no harm done if the match didn't fit. And it never did.
Do you feel that way too, Mr. Shipman?
Worked mighty fine for Eli.
James noticed that Annie didn't talk much after that. She looked as if she were on the verge of giving somebody a stern lecture, but she kept it to herself. Shipman helped James and Frank reharness the mules after dinner. The boys poked around all the way down to the river, exploring. Frank hated to leave, for Hope had been able to stretch out and rest a while on a real bed. In her condition, Lord knew she needed it. But James itched to get started. He was not nearly so confident as Shipman that Diaz would remain at the other crossing. Up here on this high bank, the wagons would be visible from across in Texas. Shipman was hitching Annie's team.
You'll camp tonight on this side. Sometime tomorrow afternoon, you'll come to a place where the river shallows out. You can cross over without too much trouble.
How'll we know the place? Is it marked?
Well, not exactly. Nobody wants to let the authorities know about it because there's been folks crossing it both ways. But there's the leavings of an old cabin that some fool let catch a fire and a burned-up tree that stood beside the cabin. The ford is about 200 yards farther on. You'll know when you come to it.
Annie didn't say anything, so Hope said it for her.
You would not reconsider and go along with us, Mr. Shipman?
Ma'am, I gotta go to Natchitoches and see about a new stock of trading goods and some pack mules. Have to be a while before I can get my others back from my Cherokee friends.
A pity. We was just beginning to get to know one another.
When you get across the river, it'd be a kindness if you'd take pains to smooth over your tracks the first little ways. That'd help others who might cross later. What the authorities don't know ain't apt to get anybody hurt. Besides, it might keep them from trailing after you.
James would not want to admit that he hadn't thought of that. He supposed he lacked the devious mind of a man like Shipman who made his living dodging detection. Shipman waved to the boys, shook hands with the men, Frank first, and tipped his hat to the two women. Hope smiled. Annie just nodded, a little cold. She had little to say as they moved south on a dim trail that paralleled the river but was never quite in sight of it. James suspected the trail had been used mostly by people like Eli Pleasant and Sly Shipman, who had no wish to be seen from the other side.
And people like us.
The idea gave James pause, for it put him in the company of smugglers. But, of course, the Lewises were not smugglers. They were just illegal immigrants. He gathered from what Shipman said that Texas had a lot of those. The trail had not been used heavily. At times it was so dim that it wasn't actually a trail at all. Often he had to pick a slow and cautious way through rough, washed-out terrain and deadfall timber that threatened to stop the wagons.
Maybe you lost the trail.
You can't lose something that nobody ever found in the first place.
He became half convinced that Shipman had sent them on a fool's errand, but every so often he would find enough of a trace to indicate that others had negotiated this same route. If they had, he could. He noticed the bay horse's ears turned suddenly forward. The animal had a knack for seeing everything that moved. James blinked, sweat burning into his eyes from the effort of picking a path. He saw half a dozen horsemen moving toward them from downriver. He wondered for a moment if Diaz might have brought soldiers across in defiance of treaty prohibitions. Well, if he had, there was little they could do on this side except threaten. Here, east of the Sabine, the Lewises were on their own country's ground. He saw in a minute that the men wore no uniforms. Uneasily, he turned back toward the wagons. He found an open spot and motioned for Annie to halt there and for Frank to bring his wagon up close to Annie's.
We got company coming, and there ain't no telling if they're friendly. Annie, you and Hope better get down and stay behind the wagons. You boys too. Frank, got your rifle loaded?
It's always loaded.
There was no hint of a smile in Frank's eyes. He fetched Hope's gun from beneath the wagon seat and loaded it as well. Annie didn't have to be told. She poured fresh powder into her rifle's pan.
What could anybody want with us?
They might want what we've got with us. The wagons and what all's in them.
It was in the back of his mind that they might even want the two women. He had heard of such things. Out of earshot of Annie and Hope, Shipman had told James and Frank that such an atrocity had befallen Sergeant Diaz's sister, one reason the soldier resented Americans so bitterly.
I count six. No, seven. If they really want these wagons, won't be much mean you can do except try to keep the women and young'uns from getting hurt.
We can fight them.
We got one shot apiece. Two, if you figure the women's rifles. If me and you get ourselves killed, what happens to Hope and Annie and the boys?
We can't just let them people take us over.
We can let them have the wagons if it comes to that.
We brought these wagons all the way from Tennessee, and I ain't giving them up without a fight.
You're just shy of 21, James. You got a long life ahead of you. You don't throw it away. You can earn back everything that's in those wagons. You can't earn your life back.
James didn't feel like arguing, but he was convinced that his brother Michael would not back away in a situation like this. James had no intention of doing so either. James put his and Annie's wagon between him and the approaching horseman, letting the long barrel of his rifle extend up and over the wagon wheel where the riders could see it. The men reined up. There were seven, just as Frank had counted. They were a rough-looking set, all bearded except for a youngster on one end who hadn't started to grow whiskers yet. Something about him reminded James of the Blackwood family back home, about as shiftless a lot all in all as one was likely to encounter anywhere besides a county jail yard. James's and Frank's rifles seemed to have gotten the riders' full attention. They held back 50 to 75 feet. All of them seemed to look to a tall, gaunt man with a gray, salted black beard that reached a long way down the front of a dirty cotton shirt. The man raised one hand, then touched his heels gently to the ribs of his black horse and rode forward toward the wagons.
Howdy, folks. Ain't no need you all being so free with them weapons. We're just traveling people like y'all. We mean you no violence.
Fine. Just go on around then. Way around.
Well, now, we'd do that, but we'd feel ashamed because we had thrown such a scare into a set of pilgrims without cause. We'd feel like you thought we was outlaws of some kind, and maybe give others a bad report about us on down the trail. We couldn't just leave here with such a misunderstanding hanging in the air.
They're out to rob us, James. You can see it written all over his face. He's playing with us. Trying to set us off our guard. Let's just back off in the timber and let them have what they want, except they can't have us.
I can shoot him right where that beard stops.
You ever shot a man?
No. He'd be my first.
And your last. Them others would be on us in a second. Let's just get the women and young'uns back into the timber.
You do it. I ain't letting them have our wagons.
Damn it, James. Listen to somebody, will you?
James was listening to something else.
They've sent somebody to go around us.
James glanced back over his shoulder and saw a dun horse. He knew the rider. For a moment, he wondered if Sly Shipman might be in league with these renegades, that he might purposely have sent these wagons south into a trap. Shipman slowed his dun horse to a walk. He carried a long rifle across his saddle. He gave the Lewises a quick glance, then turned his attention to the horsemen, especially the dark-bearded one who had moved forward.
Well now, good evening, friends. I hope I've interrupted something here that looks like it could cause some considerable grief.
If you're part of this bunch, I wish you'd tell them to put their rifles away. I never was partial to having a rifle pointed at my brisket. Makes me all fired nervous.
But I believe you can see how a bunch of you busting in here like this would make these people nervous too. Without you, I'd just ride on around and forget whatever it was you had in mind.
And just who might you be of giving out advice so free?
I'm Sly Shipman.
The man blinked in surprise at the name, but suspicion quickly crept back into his eyes.
Anybody could say they're Sly Shipman.
Who else besides the real one would want to claim such a thing?
He had a point there.
He's Shipman all right, Clem. I've seen him before.
Clem seemed to wilt a little. He gave the wagons a long, disappointed study.
And I suppose these people are with you?
They're friends of mine. I'm asking safe passage.
Clem glanced regretfully over his shoulder at the men behind him.
Since it's you, Shipman.
He backed his horse a step or two, then turned him. He waved his arm over his head. The riders took a long swing around the wagons and proceeded northward.
Oh, declare, Sly, you get better looking every time we see you.
I got to thinking about it, and I was afraid you might happen upon some of these old boys.
We was fixing to take care of things by ourselves, without help.
And just what was you fixing to do?
I was fixing to shoot that tall one and let them all know our intentions was not to give an inch.
Have you always been so damn mule-headed, or is this an ailment that's just lately come over you?
James thought Annie might mellow again to Sly Shipman in response to his rescuing them from the Louisiana Renegades, but she remained coolly civil. When she took offense, she was not lightly moved to forgiveness. James also remained suspicious. He rode beside Shipman, who knew the trail and picked an easier way for the wagons than James had been able to do. James suspected he had ridden it often, mostly in the dark. James weighed the proprieties and decided to ignore them.
Those robbers backed off real quick when they heard your name. Who'd you kill to make them so afraid of you?
Who says I killed anybody?
Stands to reason. Otherwise, they'd just gone ahead and tried to take us over, and you with us.
I told you there's an understanding, kind of, among all us that lives in the strip between Natchitoches and the river. We leave one another alone. Everybody in the strip knows me by name, even if they don't know my face. Same way they always knowed old Eli. Nobody ever messed around with Eli more than once, and that protection shed off onto me. The locust tree and them Spanish daggers you asked about, Eli put them there. They was always a symbol in the strip. They meant you was to be left the hell alone.
You never killed anybody?
I never killed anybody the world wasn't better off without.
As he had promised, the wagons reached the burned cabin about the middle of the afternoon. A rock chimney stood like a grave marker amid blackened coals and a remnant of gray ashes not yet washed away by the rains. The charred trunk of a tree stood beside the ruins. Frank said such a scene deserved a good story.
Who done this? Robbers? Indians?
Nothing so adventuresome as all that. A couple fellers I know got liquored up on Kentucky squeezins they brought from a wagon peddler in Natchitoches. One of them knocked a candle over and was too drunk to find it. Said he'd seen two of them, but the one he kept reaching for wasn't real. Him and his partner got out with nothing much except their britches, and them scorched pretty bad.
Pretty good story. But it'd make a better yarn if it had some wild Indians in it.
Well, we do the best we can with what the Lord sees fit to give us.
Shipman didn't ask James, but he spoke to Frank, Annie, and Hope.
You can either cross the river now and travel a good ways before night, or you can rest here and get a fresh start in the morning. I'll see you safely across before I go home.
What do you think, James? Reckon we hadn't better be going on?
I say we go now. We can make a few miles with the daylight we've got left.
That's how it is, then. We're all anxious to get over into Texas.
That would have been my choice, but it's your family.
Shipman started down the slope toward the river, letting James and the wagons and the livestock follow after him. Shipman rode back and forth in the edge of the water, seeking the place where the bottom would be firmest. By the time the wagons reached the river, he had found it. James feared they might have to double the teams and take the wagons across one at a time, but the ford was shallow and made that unnecessary. He rode close to Annie's wagon, ready to help her if an emergency should arise. None did. Annie was as cool as a professional mule skinner. The crossing was uneventful. James found a heavy branch that the wind had broken from a tree. He dragged it back and forth across the wet tracks left by wagons and animals. It'd be almost impossible to get the ground completely smooth, but sunshine would soon sap the water from the sand, and wind would shift enough of the dry surface that only the most observant could know someone had passed this way. James continued his work until the wagons passed out of his sight. A little way from the river, Shipman had directed Annie and Frank onto grassy ground where the tracks were less conspicuous than in the sand, though the weight of the wheels crushed the grass down. James thought Shipman was simply going to see them across the river, then turn back, but he found that Frank had talked the man into staying with them to the night camp and sharing a last good supper. James admitted to himself, though he would not have to anyone else, that Shipman helped steer them around a dense canebrake that might have cost them a lot of time if they wandered into it. They would have had to hack their way through or turn around and backtrack. They were traveling southwestward, the proper direction, but knowing the right direction was not enough. Shipman took them around the southern edge, reasoning that any soldiers who might come looking this way would probably approach from the north and would not care to invade the heavy growth of cane, even on horseback. They came upon a creek and prepared to make camp.
Mighty lucky we are to have Sly with us.
I'll bet there's some sheriffs that would like to have him too.
Frank grinned and led his mules down to the water. Annie said nothing. James thought she tried hard not to look in Shipman's direction. James expected to see Shipman turn back as they broke camp the next morning and set the wagons on a southwesterly course. But Shipman beckoned him off to one side.
I'm hanged if I can figure out what I'd done to provoke your sister. I hate to go off and leave her feeling ill towards me.
She's always been kind of touchy. Half the time you can't tell what she's thinking.
The men quickly joined back up with the rolling wagons.
Well, Mr. Shipman, if it suits you, we sure could use your guidance a little further. There's bound to be some more cane breaks ahead, and you seem to know this country like the back of your hand.
I'll do it, but I'll want something in return.
Now we're coming to it at last. James had felt all along that Shipman's help had not been given simply out of the kindness of a big heart.
And what might that be?
Shipman looked at Annie.
That picture Miss Annie drawed of me. I'd sure admire to have it. When I'm old and gray and all hunched over, I can show everybody what I looked like when I was in my prime.
James doubted that Shipman would ever get old. Somebody was bound to shoot him long before then.
I certainly have no use for it.
I don't reckon you've drawn a picture of yourself, Miss Lewis. If so, I'd admire to have that, too.
No, I've drawn pictures of everybody else, but I wouldn't know how to draw one of myself.
It'd be a mighty pretty picture. You ought to try.
Annie blushed and looked away. James saw a flicker of victory in Shipman's eyes. They traveled past long stretches of forest, skirted numerous cane breaks, and sometimes traversed open stretches of prairie land where the spring grass was tall and green, and James thought the soil must be deep and black. Much of it would be good farming country, probably fine for cotton like so much of the Louisiana land they had passed through. He wondered at times why Michael and Andrew had gone so much farther to the southwest, passing up all this likely-looking ground where, so far as he could tell, no one had set a plow in the ground or built a cabin. They traveled all day without seeing a person or any sign that a human had ever passed this way, except for occasional traces of old wagon tracks gullied out by the rains.
I don't get it. With all this pretty land, why is it that no one has settled this piece of Texas?
You'll find some squatters hidden back in yonder if you look real good. They'd just as soon you wouldn't, though. The Mexican government says where it wants people to live. They ain't opened this up because it's a long ways from where the soldiers are at, and they don't trust people too far out of their sight, not even their own people. They've tried to hold the settlers in colonies like Austin's and DeWitt's and DeLeon's. Easier to keep watch on them that way.
Looks like they don't want us anywhere.
I've been expecting this to come. It's hard to take people as different as Americans and Mexicans and mix them up together. They don't talk alike and they don't think alike. Americans are used to going where they damn well please and doing what suits their fancy. Mexicans have been ruled hard by first one and then another. They're used to having to take orders whether they like them or not. My guess is that this is liable to blow up into a fight if the government don't ease off on that new law.
They can sure have a fight with me if they want it.
Fighting's easy to talk about when you're a long ways off. You can get damn bloody when you're right there in the middle of it.
Shipman turned away from James, moving his dun horse back to Annie's wagon. He rode along and tried to talk to her. He didn't appear to be getting much response. James would have given a right smart to know what he was telling her, but he wouldn't compromise his dignity by dropping back to listen. He let his mind run free over this big, rich-looking land and his plans for making part of it his own. Shipman was still with them when they stopped for night camp beside a spring he'd said would be there. Shipman ate more supper than anyone else. Afterward, he and Frank enjoyed swapping jokes and tall stories. Frank gloried in having a new audience for some stories that everyone in the family had already heard many times. James had not seen his cousin glow so much since the last of the other wagon people had pulled away. Shipmen told stories James thought must be outrageously exaggerated about life in what he called the neutral strip, about adventures shared with old Eli Pleasant, about narrow escapes from the military authorities on both sides of the border. Annie said little but listened with rapt attention. James suspected that if Shipman were to ask her when he turned back tomorrow, she would probably swallow her resentment and go with him. But he felt confident that Shipman would not ask her. He didn't appear the type to be burdened down by a woman, especially one as full of sass as Annie could be at times when things didn't go her way. Suspicious of Shipman's intentions, James rolled out his blanket not far from Annie's. He was almost disappointed that nothing untoward happened during the night because the vigil kept him from getting much sleep. Shipman slept at a considerable distance from the wagons, and so far as James could tell, he never left his blankets once. At dawn, they were all up, the women fixing breakfast while James and Frank and the boys prepared to break camp. James saw Shipman hurriedly saddling his horse. The smuggler swung up onto the dun's back and rode into camp, his eyes showing strain.
Folks, I'm afraid I can't stay for breakfast. I'm fixing to see just how fast this dun of mine can run.
What's the matter?
I've got to apologize, ma'am. I misfigured the way Sergeant Diaz was going to figure. He's right yonder with his whole detail, coming this way in a good, smart trot.
James felt his heart leap as he saw the horseman coming across the prairie no more than 200 yards away.
What can we do?
Ain't much you can do except surrender. But the worst he'll do to you is maybe haul you into Nacogdoches. Might even keep you in jail a few days before he takes you back to Louisiana. But he's got a deep, dark dungeon cell waiting for me. Like to be an old man before I seen sunshine again.
You're fixing to run off? You ain't gonna stay and help us fight them?
Fight them? Hell! Didn't you ever learn how to count? You all better educate this young fighting rooster before he gets everybody killed. Good luck, folks, and adios!
Several soldiers split off to follow him. Annie cupped her hands in front of her mouth.
Run, Sly! Run!
James had a feeling that the soldiers would catch nothing except the smell of Shipman's dust.
Damn pity.
Turning to Frank, he found that his cousin appeared resigned to whatever fate Diaz planned for them. Frank's rifle leaned against a wagon wheel. He looked at James's, his eyes giving advice that he didn't have to speak aloud. This time, James counted the soldiers and knew resistance was useless.
Double damn the luck!
James stood beside his older cousin and waited for Diaz to rein up.
I'm getting all mighty tired of this.
Nacogdoches was not a large town. Nothing to compare with its French sister Natchitoches to the east. On the last of the 2 days it took the wagons to reach the old Spanish-Mexican outpost, James began seeing a fair number of small farms. Most apparently operated by Mexican people. Disappointment and anger rode with him as steady companions. He silently cursed Diaz a while, then Sly Shipman. For the first time, he began to develop a strong feeling of being helpless in a foreign land. The feeling was reinforced by the soldiers who rode on either side, and by Sergeant Diaz, who had lectured the Lewises severely on the penalties for breaking Mexican law. Diaz had also talked about their poor judgment in aiding and abetting a fugitive from justice. James had not restrained himself from commenting on the soldier's use of slow horses.
A few days in our jail will teach you respect.
But whatever the sergeant's resentment about their slipping back into Texas, James noticed that he remained solicitous about Hope's health, and he camped early the first evening when he saw she was becoming tired. The second afternoon brought them through the tall pines and into the outskirts of town while the sun was still more than an hour high in the west.
Me and James can stand some time in the jailhouse if we have to. You wouldn't put the women folk and the boys in there, would you?
My family was once badly mistreated in your country. Yours will not be mistreated in mine.
It was way back in Tennessee when all that happened. We didn't have nothing to do with it.
You are of the same blood. It is a blood that has no place in Mexico. I wish none of you had ever been allowed here.
Diaz had sent a messenger to Nacogdoches the day before to let the garrison know his detail would be bringing in prisoners. A couple of dozen soldiers were lined up in front of an old stone building that appeared to be the most substantial in the small town. James assumed it was a jail or a courthouse or something of that type. An officer came out of the building. Diaz saluted him and gave a report. James glanced at Frank. Though his cousin was not smiling, his face was composed, resigned. Frank Lewis was a hard man to discourage for long. The officer listened impassively to Diaz's report, his dark eyes studying the wagons, the two men, and the boys on horseback. At length, the officer turned to look behind him. James saw another man standing in the doorway. By the darkness of his skin, James knew him to be a Mexican. Evidently, he was not a soldier, for he wore no uniform. Yet he bore himself in what James took to be a military manner, his back and shoulders so straight that they must have hurt. The officer beckoned him with a wave. The civilian stepped out into the dirt street, giving James and Frank a thin smile and nodding affirmatively as if he knew them. James glanced at Frank, silently asking a question. Frank shook his head.
Never saw him before, but it looks friendly. Right now, we could sure use a friend.
The man walked up near Frank's horse.
Your name is Lewis.
It sure is. Frank Lewis. This here is James. He's Lewis, too.
The man nodded, his smile broadening.
I can see it. Which is the brother of Michael and Andrew?
That's me. You know them?
For many, many years. Turn. Look.
A man came striding up the dirt street. A tall man with a smile as broad as an axe handle. James began to tremble. He would know that lanky frame anywhere, for it looked much like his own, like Frank's, like all the Lewis men. James dismounted, ignoring Diaz and the soldiers. He took a couple of steps forward, tears suddenly blurring the man who approached him.
Michael?
Oh, you're close. I'm Andrew, and you have to be James.
They threw their arms around each other. James saw through a blur as Annie sprang nimbly down from the seat in a flare of gray skirts. She pushed James aside in her eagerness to hug Andrew.
Mm. Oh.
Don't you know me?
Mm. It's been almost 10 years. You've changed, both of you.
Yeah, you've grown up.
Annie backed off to arm's length to stare at him, tears coursing down her cheeks.
You've changed too, but I'd know you from a mile away, Andrew.
James felt disappointment that it was not Michael who had come, and little shame for not realizing this was Andrew instead of Michael. The Michael he remembered had to be taller than this, stronger too, and fiercer of eye.
Andrew! Ha!
Frank pumped Andrew's hand and then hugged him. Seeing the two cousins together, James was struck by how much they looked alike. Some Lewis long way back in their heritage must have planted mighty strong seed.
Where's Michael?
Oh, he's home where he's supposed to be, and where we'll all be going as soon as we get some paperwork done.
James looked toward Sergeant Diaz, who watched without pleasure.
The sergeant yonder, he's got a different notion. He's wanting to throw me and Frank in the jailhouse a while, then send us back to Louisiana.
I know Sergeant Diaz, but what's more important, Alejandro Zaragoza knows the Comandante. He's got everything fixed for me to take you all to San Felipe and then on out to the Colorado River.
You mean we won't be sent back to Louisiana after all?
No, you're in Texas to stay.
Zaragoza embraced Sergeant Diaz in the traditional abrazo.
It is good to see you again, Lieutenant.
Not Lieutenant, not anymore. Just plain Alejandro Zaragoza. I'm a farmer now, not a soldier.
Now you will always be Lieutenant to me, sir.
Diaz looked toward the Americano wagon people with misgivings.
I have gone to much trouble to teach these foreigners a lesson. Have you and the Comandante come to an agreement to let them go?
I am sorry to disappoint you, my old friend, but I could do no less. These are family to the Lewises, Andrew and Miguel. You know they once saved my life.
And you once saved Miguel's. I understand, sir, even if I do not agree with you. But every Americano we allow into Tejas is one more Americano we must fight when the war comes.
You talk as if war is inevitable. So long as men of goodwill prevail, it is not. There are many good Americans in Tejas, loyal to the government of Mexico. They want to preserve the friendship.
Do they? Already there is much resistance to the new law that says no more Americanos are allowed in Tejas, except by special permission.
The law was poorly conceived.
I am sure it will be repealed when cooler heads are given time to reconsider.
And what do you think your Americano friends will say when the government sends more soldiers into Tejas and sets up more garrisons among them? Especially when they discover that the government is sending convict soldiers taken from the prisons of Mexico. And that when the convict service is done, they will be expected to settle among the Americanos.
I had not heard of this.
You will hear much more, I think, when it becomes generally known. I wonder how your friends the Lewises will like having convict soldiers sent to watch over them.
They will not like it. But as I told you, they are loyal to Mexico.
For how long, my lieutenant? For how long?
Texas got to looking a lot better to James as he and Andrew and Zaragoza rode southwestward, the wagons and the loose stock trailing behind them through the dark pine woods, through the clearings where small farmers struggled to gain even a meager subsistence. Andrew insisted on their spending the first night out in Nacogdoches at a small rancho owned by a Mexican family named Moreno. Remembering Sergeant Diaz, James had reservations about associating with anybody who looked Mexican, including even Zaragoza. He was taken by surprise when a short, heavy-set matriarch threw her arms around Andrew. Andrew explained that this dark-faced woman who talked in happy torrents was his mother-in-law. James didn't understand a word, for she spoke no English. He stood by uncomfortably, not knowing whether to nod yes or shake his head until Andrew translated for him. On this farm, Andrew recounted, he had learned to know Petra and her family at the time of the abortive Fredonian Rebellion. Here, too, some 10 years earlier, 16-year-old Michael Lewis had fought for his life against a wound given him by a Spanish soldier in the slaughter that had felled the first Mordecai Lewis. Only the care and attention of the widow Moreno and old Eli Pleasant had pulled him through. And the vigilance of the two larger Moreno boys, at considerable risk to themselves, had prevented him from being retaken by searching Spanish troops.
I came here in pretty bad shape myself. Some of those Fredonians liked to beat me to death in Nacogdoches. Old Eli came along, taught them the scriptures. Mother Moreno and Petra took care of me till I got on my feet, the same way they took care of Michael.
James dimly recalled hearing a little something about the Fredonian Rebellion.
From what we heard in Tennessee, it didn't seem like much. Just a handful of people who declared an independent republic or some such of a thing.
They took it serious down in Mexico. You can blame that new immigration law on the Fredonians. Just goes to show what trouble a few hotheads can cause.
Andrew introduced the newcomers to brothers-in-law Carlos, Ramon, and Felipe, and to a pretty young sister-in-law named Juanita, who appeared to be within a year or so of James's age. The younger Morenos seemed pleasant, but they spoke little more English than their mother. Annie and Juanita traded a lot of sign language and confusion and laughter. Frank eagerly pressed Andrew to translate for him while he questioned the Moreno men about their farming and stock-raising methods. Frank tried telling them some stories out of Tennessee, too. James suspected that a lot was lost in the translation, for they often laughed in the wrong places.
James, you ought to strike up a friendship with that girl, Juanita. She ain't a bit hard on the eyes. If I wasn't a married man...
James was not ready to start thinking in serious terms about a woman, and when he did, she would be an American.
She seems friendly enough. It's probably just because I'm Andrew's brother. How are a man and a woman supposed to get to know one another if they don't even speak the same language?
Some languages are the same anywhere you go.
He was an incurable romantic. From the time he'd been 12 years old, Frank had been something of a ladies' man. He still could be, if Hope didn't keep a watchful eye on him. James couldn't feel really comfortable among these strangers. Their darker skins and their foreign language reminded him not only of the unpleasantness with Sergeant Diaz, but of the fact that James had come into a land alien to him. He would not have expressed it. Indeed, he didn't quite even understand it. But he felt a little bothered as he observed the warm affection, the earnest caring and laughter between his brother Andrew and these Morenos. He saw that Andrew had established strong family ties here. Ties James couldn't help feeling properly belonged to blood kin, the Lewises. He even felt a degree of loss because these people had shared in Andrew's life the last 5 or so years, and probably Michael's as well. All James had had of Andrew and Michael in almost a decade had been boyhood memories and infrequent letters that found their way to Tennessee. He was confused about his feelings toward Alessandra Zaragoza, too. On the one hand, he was grateful that the man had helped smooth the way for their remaining in Texas, and he recognized that a strong bond existed between Andrew and Zaragoza. Even so, Zaragoza still seemed foreign to him, unfamiliar, like this land. Much as James wanted to accept him as a friend, he held something back. It was the darker skin, the strange language, the culture so different from anything he had known. He remembered what Sly Shipman had said about the difficulty of Mexicans and Americans understanding one another, much less living in total harmony, where their heritages were a world apart. Andrew appeared to have bridged the gap between those heritages and to feel at home among the Mexicans. James wondered if he ever could. Right now, it seemed unlikely. He would ask Michael when he reached the Colorado River. In the old days, Michael had always seemed to know whatever James had needed to find out. Michael, the quiet one. Michael, the solitary man of the woods. Michael, the man James wanted desperately to become. As they moved down the trail toward San Felipe, Andrew rode much of the time beside Zaragoza. James would pull up beside him, only to find more often than not that they were talking in Spanish. That language seemed to come easier to Andrew than English came to Zaragoza. Though James understood the problem, it left him feeling shut out. He would pull back beside Annie's wagon. She would want to know what Andrew and Zaragoza were talking about. Rather than admit he didn't know, James would tell her something innocuous and drift on back to Frank and Hope's wagon. He could always depend on conversation with Frank, even though it was usually one-sided. He was amazed to see virtually no people, though they traveled for several days. They met a few travelers, but they saw no sign of permanent dwellings, of farms, or other settled human activity until they reached the borders of the Austin colony. Then, suddenly, James could almost pretend that he was back in Tennessee. Nothing had the Mexican appearance he had expected. The farms, the houses, the fences, and fields looked pretty much like the ones he'd left at home, except that most had the look of being new. No legal American settlers had yet been here as long as 10 years. Some of the late arrivals were just beginning to break their first ground, plant their first crops. James would ride out to look over the rail fences at the fields, to examine the newly turned earth. It looked rich, smelled rich. He felt he ought to be out there with a plow, though he had always been more at home with a rifle. That was a Lewis blessing, or perhaps it was a curse, that most of the menfolk were torn between the woods and the field. They came in time to the village of San Felipe de Austin, headquarters for the Austin colony. James had heard much about Austin over the last several years, and especially on this trip. He looked forward to seeing the noted impresario to determine if he was real or if he was simply a legend. He had heard so many stories back at home about Old Hickory Jackson and David Crockett that he sometimes suspected they didn't even exist, except in the minds of certain shameless old liars. It might have been the same way with Austin. But Austin was real, for Andrew pointed out his cabin, a double structure with the traditional dog run in the center and a rocked-up well in front. The place was surrounded by heavy live oak trees, their branches strewn with beards of Spanish moss that waved gently in the breeze. The town had nothing much Spanish or Mexican about it, so far as James could see. It could have been an out-of-the-way Tennessee settlement on the edge of the old frontier from its outward appearance. Most of the buildings were built of logs, for timber was plentiful here along the broad, muddy Brazos River. The style of construction was strictly frontier American.
I thought this was supposed to be part of Mexico. Looks to me like we must have gone in a circle and found our way back home.
Yeah, don't be saying that too loud. Mexican authorities have noticed the same thing. Some of them say we're an American island in the Mexican Sea. They say we're fixing to crowd everybody else out.
Maybe that wouldn't be a bad idea. I feel better amongst our own kind.
Those people didn't have to let us come in here. They could have just as well kept all this to themselves, but they opened it to us, and I feel real bad when I hear anybody talking ungrateful.
I didn't mean it that way.
James had meant it that way, but Andrew's adverse reaction made him wonder. Andrew had been here long enough to know the country. James was just going by first impressions. He admitted to himself, but not to anyone else, that he could be wrong. He was disappointed when Andrew told him Austin had left for Mexico City to see what, if anything, he could do about getting the new immigration law liberalized. Andrew introduced the family to Austin's business partner, Sam Williams, who went over the legal documents with them and accepted the money James and Frank had brought to make the required payment on their land. Because both presented themselves to be livestock producers as well as farmers, they received a liberal grant of grazing land. They were stockmen without livestock, except for the milk cows and the few loose horses. Frank, being married, received much more acreage. Williams looked to James.
Under the colonization laws as established by Mexico, when and if you find yourself a bride, you will qualify for additional land.
I already got a sister who gives me hell enough. I sure ain't looking for a wife to make it worse.
Well, it is just a thought to keep in mind should one of our beautiful young Texas ladies catch your fancy. There is a great deal to be said for matrimony, as your brothers Andrew and Michael can tell you.
James had not seen any beautiful young Texas ladies so far, other than Juanita Moreno, and he'd not been able to hold any kind of sustained conversation with her.
Don't you be holding up supper waiting for me to come in married, Mr. Williams.
Annie, being a single woman, did not qualify for land.
It doesn't seem fair that I'm left out just because I'm a woman. I know how to farm. I know how to make my own way.
James was not surprised that Annie protested. She usually had something to say on just about anything that came along. But Williams was taken aback.
I can understand your feelings, young lady, but that is the way the laws of Mexico are written. They assume you will marry, and at that time your husband will qualify for additional land.
Him, not me. What do I get?
A home, children, a husband who will no doubt love and cherish you. Just what every woman wants.
Not every woman. I've gotten along 22 years without a husband.
With that kind of attitude, James figured she'd probably have to do without one for another 22. Her only chance would be to grab one quickly before he had time to discover her snappish nature. On a large map, William showed the location of Michael's and Andrew's land. He'd pencil in parcels for James and Frank, adjoining those and fronting on the Colorado River.
Michael and Andrew handpicked these parcels, so you can rest assured that they will be good ones.
James figured if Michael had done the picking, there'd be plenty of woods for a man to hunt in. Frank fretted a little about the lateness of the season, whether there'd still be time to break out land, get seed in the ground, and make a crop before frost.
Yeah, don't you worry none, Frank. We don't generally have the first freeze here till way down in November. Main thing is to get your planting done in time to catch the spring rains.
That means the planting has to come first, and the building of a cabin will have to wait. But Hope can't wait. She'll be due about June or so.
Me and Michael and Marie and Petra, we took care of that back in the winter when there wasn't any farming to do. We put up a cabin for you and Hope and the boys. It's waiting for you. James, me and Petra figured you could double up with us for a while. Oh, Annie, we didn't figure on you at all. We had no idea you were coming.
Neither did anybody else. She always did have strange notions.
I figured I'd have to come along to watch out for James. He'd have probably taken the wrong trail and wound up in Canada or some other foreign country.
This one is foreign enough for me.